Great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. Coming up in a few minutes in today's Clarkrageous Moment, there's a big push to get you to buy another type of insurance. I'm going to tell you about it and why you should avoid the scaremongering. And later, your boss may love you, but doesn't love giving you raises. What are you going to do about that? We're going to talk. We're going to talk about something else too, and that is the affordability of housing, construction for businesses, apartments, you name it. We've got a serious problem in the United States with affordability because construction costs have gone kaflooey, gone crazy. You talk to any builder, and he or she will tell you the biggest problem they have is getting enough workers who are qualified to do the work and meeting construction schedules. But you know, there's a solution to this that is right before our eyes that only there are little hints of people seizing the opportunity it presents. And that is a weird one. Using shipping containers as what you use for housing, retail businesses, apartments, individual homes and apartments, schools, and around the world and in spots around the United States, people are doing that. Shipping containers in a quick hurry can be made into suitable housing or a retail business. The other day I was at a shopping center that was partially traditional construction and partially shipping containers. And the creativity used with those shipping containers, they look like an art form. Following the devastating earthquake that hit New Zealand, areas that had their commercial districts just devastated were able to get back up and running in a big hurry by using shipping containers. And we in the United States have a massive supply of these things just sitting unloved at various ports of entry. They stack up as high as you can see, as far as you can see, unloved, unused. And they can be very quickly converted into housing or obviously retail. And so we miss opportunities when we look at problems only with the solutions we're used to, instead of looking for solutions that require, excuse the pun, out-of-the-box thinking. In Orlando, there's a new retail development that is almost entirely shipping containers. And it's really good-looking. So there are these opportunities for us to do things quicker and more efficiently than we're doing in the United States. And the opportunities in housing, where so often local zoning only recognizes traditional sticks-up building, fails to appreciate or account for the issue of affordability for so many Americans, both as individuals trying to live on their own or as families trying to afford a home. We've got to embrace the opportunities that these shipping containers offer. And that's not the only kind of solution, but it's one that we should absolutely embrace. And you may wonder, could a shipping container be anything other than ugly? Yes, it can. Just look online. Look at some of the pictures of some of the developments using them. You'll be surprised. Jamie joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Jamie.
Hey, Clark. It's a real pleasure and honor to be able to speak with you.
Well, great to have you here, Jamie. And congratulations. You got a daughter who's done with school, huh?
Yeah, well, it's one of those mixed congratulations. I'm great she finally got through. It took her 6.5 years. But now, of course...
Well, how long did it take John Belushi in Animal House? Was it 12 years or something? What did it take him? So 6.5 is not terrible.
Well, no, it isn't. But as a result, you know, we're paying tuition. She's accumulated some debt. And so she's now got over $30,000 in debt. And even with that, my wife and I, we've been paying some of her tuition just to try and keep that down. But now the debt is due, and she got notice. I think it's a little over 7%. And, you know, so I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to try and finance it.
All right, first things first, she must not have taken advantage of federal student loans that for the last several years the interest rates were down in the threes fixed. If she's at 7, she must have gone into private student loans, which are only a last resort, never a first. That's a pretty high rate.
Yeah, it is. And the payment is a pretty high payment. So, and she doesn't have any credit. So, you know, because I was thinking, well, you know, you can go to a bank and maybe get some money, you know, at a 4 or 5% rate. But she's got no credit. So her credit score is terrible, so her rate would be high on that.
Now, wait. How could her credit...
A home equity loan.
Now, let's talk for a minute.
Get one at 4%, but then it really cements us to her loan.
Right. So she should take responsibility. What is her degree in? What kind of work is she going to be doing?
She's going to be doing social services and counseling in social services settings.
And does she have a job yet?
She's a waitress.
So she hadn't been able to find a job using what she studied yet?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a tough burden. How aggressively is she looking for a job?
I think now that she saw the price tag, I think that's going to be an incentive for her. But she's in Maine, you know, and the Maine is not a big labor market up there, and so I think she'll try, but you know, she's going to need some help along the way for sure.
Yeah. So Maine, you know, has the oldest population in the United States.
Oh, really?
If I remember right, the oldest average population, and there's enormous need for people with her skill set in senior facilities and involved with aging.
Uh-huh.
And that may be an area she hasn't looked at with the degree she's got and the skill set she has, but I would definitely encourage her to look in that area as a potential employment. She's looking at monthly payments of, what, about $275 a month? Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think that's about what it came out.
And, wow, that was quick math in my head. Okay, so even if she's working as a waitress till she finds what she wants to do, she can come up with $275 a month.
Yeah.
And I do not want you to take on this as your responsibility. I think you said it yourself a minute ago. You said when she saw what her payment was going to be, it got her more focused on a career.
That's true.
So I think you don't ride to the rescue here.
Yeah,
you know, you indulge her.
That's my thinking.
You indulge her 6.5 years in school, and at $275 a month, she can make that happen.
Okay.
And let her be responsible for these. So I would
We're still going to want to be a safety net for her in the event something happens. But I think you're right. We're going to say, go out and see if you can find a good job that pays more than waitressing.
But even as a waitress, that's not a hall pass for you to make those minimum payments for her. She should be making those. The discipline needs to start with her, because if you just come not as a backstop, like you just described, but instead you're in first position, then there's never a sense of urgency on her part to take ownership of the loans and be the one who's paying on them. I think she needs that discipline in order to get her moving towards, hey, I really got to get going on getting this job. And let her try that senior thing I talked about and see if that generates any job leads for her. Best to her. Matthew's with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Matthew.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good.
So your wife's credit card, though, isn't good. What happened?
So about two months ago, I was just checking the cards as I usually do in the morning, and I saw that a charge came across on her card for about $900. I called her and asked her if she did it. She said no. So I called the company that the charge was actually made at and gave them the credit card number and said, hey, I think this was used fraudulently. Can y'all cancel that? And they said they couldn't cancel it, but they refunded the card and refunded the amount. Well, then I go to the bank and reported the card. So the bank just took the little charge straight off, but nothing with the refunded money. And so my biggest question was, do I need to wait around for the banks to kind of figure out that little extra that they
did? Wait, you got the money twice?
Yeah, so I got the money back twice.
Okay, tell your bank. Tell them.
I figured.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to be in a position where you're like, hey, I got one over on the bank. Everybody hates the banks anyway. I scored one on them. Nah. No, tell them you just realized that you got the refund twice.
Right.
And just that's how you tell them and say, how do I make sure you get your money back?
Okay.
And leave it to them administratively. And they may tell you, you know, we hate you, Matthew. You're wasting our time. I got to get to the next call. Why are you trying to give us our money back? And they're used to people calling and saying surprised. The other thing. So all I want you to do is do the right thing, and it'll be up to the bank to do what it should do. But they may tell you that stop bothering us and just go away. But at least tell them.
At least so. Yeah. I was kind of enjoying the negative balance, so we weren't paying any kind of interest or anything.
Right, I got it. Yeah.
Pretty nice.
But it's best to do the right thing.
No problem.
Okay. Take care. I got to tell you something we talked about on the air before with when I bought a bicycle on a .com and they never charged me for it. Or actually, they had charged me for it and then they accidentally refunded it. And I called customer no service at the company and kept telling them that I needed to pay them money. And the person was like so annoyed with me that I was wasting their time. And I still have not paid for that bicycle. It feels wrong. It feels terrible. At least I called him and said, hey, I owe you money.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Today's Clarkrageous moment is about people trying to scare you into spending money you don't need to.
Scams, ripoffs, outrages. It's a Clarkrageous moment.
We got a pitch. We get pitches from PR outfits all the time. I mean, I don't even know how many dozens we get every day. And we got one that's all written in a way that news reporter could put quotes right into a story. And it's about how much fear parents have paying tuition for private school or college that their son or daughter is going to drop out, and then they're going to be out all the tuition money. And that parents have this intense fear about losing this money. So here's the thing. The pitch about buying insurance is really strong from schools. I don't know if they get commissioned for pitching the insurance or not, tuition, refund, reimbursement, whatever. And yeah, there are people who something will happen and they drop out of school more often at college than if somebody's going private school through 12th grade. But it can happen at any level, any point. So the money you lay out is a lot, and the fear is there, but the chances that someone will drop out in the midst of a semester, quarter, term, or in the case of private school within the year, is really, really small. People may leave a school at the end of a term. People may leave a private school at the end of a year in K through 12. But the odds of leaving mid-year or midterm are so low that spending the money on the premiums is something that I don't advise or recommend at all. So when you get that pitch for the protection, and all the scare stats are thrown at you about the costs and all the rest, don't worry, be happy, don't spend that money. You can't insure your life against every possible event. And this is money better in your pocket. There's a culture in corporate America working against your wallet. I want to tell you how to fight back. It's my pleasure to welcome you to the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make, but also like to help you make more money when I can. After the financial scandals, the banking scandals of last decade, it's been 10 years now, and there were years that the job pickings were extremely lean, and employers became brutal to their workers, either out of absolute necessity to try to keep the doors open, or because they were taking advantage of the situation in the labor market. And so this mentality took hold in corporate America to be as stingy with workers as possible. And raises, we don't do raises. Or, oh, well, you're a top performer, so we're going to grant you a 1.4% raise, which is the maximum we can under our guidelines. You know, we'd love to give you more because you are such an outstanding performer, but guidelines are guidelines. I mean, this is the lame corporate mentality. And you can either say, okay, or you can know how to be a better negotiator. So you got to break their patterns. You got to break how they're thinking. And you don't want to do it in a way that it's a boxing match, because you're going to end up with a bloody nose in a boxing match. And even if they're afraid they're going to lose you and they do something for you, people are going to hold grudges. They're going to come back and get you for it. So you want to be smart about this. If you feel like your skills and experience and your effort and your value to the firm should get you a larger paycheck, then the key is to go test the waters outside of that employer. I find so often when people are frustrated about the pay they make, they're negotiating with themselves, which is what you're doing if you're frustrated and you don't go see if there actually is more green money across the street. More money for you. Maybe better benefits, better promotion path. A lot of times we jump across the street and the grass is not really greener. See, you don't want to be impulsive, but you got to test your value elsewhere if you feel like where you are, they're not being generous enough. But do not, regardless of whether you check out other opportunities or you just are frustrated you're not making enough, do not ever become confrontational with your employer. And the best you can have a person who is a mentor to you, who's an experienced person who you can befriend and you can talk to and not complain, just say, you know, how do I get promoted around here? What are the things I can do that make me more valuable here? Are there training programs I should take? You want to show you're a go-getter and that you want to know how you make yourself more valuable to the place you are. And people love being asked for information. They don't like being confronted or challenged. So the more you basically are interviewing people for information in your firm, the more likely you're noticed, you're not confrontational, you're somebody who's obviously interested in the business. You ask questions like, how can I be more valuable to this company? Again, you're not saying, how do I get more money out of you? It's how do I make more money for you? And people respect that you're trying to be more relevant, more valuable. Because today, with this mentality that, well, you should be happy we wrote you a paycheck, that 10-year cycle of treating you like you're disposable or something is a problem. I mean, look what's happened is corporate profits have gone up and up and up. Companies have continued to squeeze employees on wages. And you're only going to get more money in that kind of mentality where, what, you want any of this? This is all for me. This is for me. Is when you clearly demonstrate you have market value, number one, or demonstrate why you are more valuable to them than what you're being paid right now. Raymond is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Raymond.
Good afternoon.
How are you?
I'm doing well. It's nice to talk with you. I'm a big fan for many years.
Well, thank you very much, Raymond. You're interested in joining me in real estate investing.
I would love to. So about a year ago, I got involved in one of the peer-to-peer companies for doing just loans, and I like the experience. And I like the flexibility and all that stuff. And I'm wondering if there's something that's commensurate with doing the real estate. And I've heard that there are the crowdsourced real estate companies to do that with, but I just wanted to get your take on it.
So first of all, which one of the peer-to-peers are you in? Are you in Prosper, or Lending Club, or another?
A Lending Club.
And how has it been? What kind of, after charge-offs and stuff, what kind of rate of return are you seeing?
About 6.5.
6.5 is great. I mean, you know, you can't earn, it's not equivalent risk, but you certainly can't earn that with idle cash and a CD or savings account.
That's true.
Yes, I've been in Lending Club and Prosper for, I guess, about 2 years now. And one of them I'm earning, gosh, I got to look at the two of them. Let me just say, in general, I'm earning similar territory to where you are 2 years in. And are you picking the investments, the loans that you fund, or are you letting their algorithm pick for you?
Yeah, I'm letting the algorithm pick for now. I wanted to get into individual picking, but I just haven't had the time.
Okay, so I didn't have an interest in actually picking the individual funds. So I'm doing like you are. I'm letting the algorithm do it. And I have had a number of loans go into charge-off status, but overall, I'm still making a good return. Now let's go to your question about the real estate kind of thing. You see, you don't want to own an individual property, just like we're talking about with Lending Club. You don't want to own something and have to manage it and pick tenants and all that. You want to just go into a fund of some kind.
That's true. I've been investing in REITs for years, and somebody recently got me interested in actually doing real estate, you know, being a landlord and all that stuff. And I thought, well, that might not be my cup of tea. It might be better to get into something like this first. So here I am.
So I'm a big believer in the barbell theory on real estate, that you either own and actively manage real estate yourself, or that you go really wide like you've been doing, being in REITs, but I go wider. I only do REIT funds, you know, where it's a fund of several REITs together. You can go in a REIT index fund. The reason I like those is the expenses are like nothing. You pay, like Vanguard's, you pay a quarter of a point a year. And because everything's transparent in that, you don't have to worry that anybody's burying expenses on you in things or whatever. You can go in something like the Cohen and Steers Realty Fund that is not as low cost as a REIT index, but is considered to be over the years one of the best funds to invest in a widely diversified real estate portfolio. Lately, though, all the calls I've been getting have been about these real estate pools where you go in with a relatively small number of people and they're private placements, if you will, and you're investing in a very small pool of real estate at potentially much higher expenses. Stated expenses will usually be 1% to 2% a year, but then there's all the hidden expenses as well. And I don't recommend that. Dave is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Dave.
Oh, hi, Clark. It's great to talk to you.
Well, great to have you here. And I love your question.
Okay. Here's my wife and I, we brown bag our lunch to work, and we avoid sugary drinks, but we're really hooked on flavored seltzers. And we each take two to work each day, and we might even drink one at home. And, you know, we buy store brand on sale, and we probably average about 20 cents a can. But now I'm wondering if we should buy one of the machines that'll make it for us. But I'm hesitant to lay out that kind of money. And then I just looking, researching it, I see that there's the ongoing cost of you have to buy the CO2 tanks with it. So I'm wondering if it's something that we could actually save money on.
So we're talking about getting a SodaStream?
Yeah, I guess that's the big brand that's out there.
So yeah. If you get a SodaStream and you just make carbonated water, you know, just make sparkling water from it, not flavored, it's a slam dunk that it's so much cheaper than you buying any kind of sparkling water. When you start doing SodaStream and you're doing flavored sparkling water, then your cost advantage is much narrower between it and buying a store brand flavored sparkling water. Because if you're buying store brand in the big bulk packs and you're paying 20 cents a can, you're paying about a penny and a half an ounce, you're not going to have a huge price advantage going SodaStream.
Oh, I thought the price of the flavors would have been negligible because they were concentrated, but I guess that's not the case.
No, I mean, you can run the numbers yourself, but the SodaStream market, they've done so well with people who want carbonated water, which is a huge market, unflavored carbonated water, which is a massive market now.
Sure.
And then the SodaStream price advantage is absolutely gigantic.
Oh, because they're replacing Perrier.
Right.
Well, I
or any you know, as they call it now, the sparkling beverage category. But when you have to buy the flavored packets to go with it, that's where if you gave me already, you already set me up by buying the less expensive store brand flavored water. In your case, I just don't know that you'd save enough to make it worth doing. So maybe just keep buying those store brands, and especially when they're on sale. Bill is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Clark. How are you doing today?
Great, thank you. We're going to talk about your mom, huh?
Yeah. First of all, I feel like I ought to be saying that old standard line, long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, it's great to have you here.
Yeah, the situation is, mom is, she's 88 years old. Her health is slowly fading. Sooner or later, she is going to pass away. And I'm just looking for some resources about, you know, what to do. Should I, you know, go over to her house and find her deceased? Now, my wife has been through this with both of her parents, and I know I can, she'll be a good resource, you know, of what to do and things like that. But I just wonder what else is kind of information.
So she's still living on her own?
Yes, sir.
Wow. All right. And how often is someone able to look in on her?
I go there at least two or three times a week.
And does she have any medic alert device?
Yes, she does.
Okay. By the way, this is for reference for others, since you already have one. We have information about one that has no monthly monitoring cost on Clark.com if anybody needs a medical monitoring device. So if you are checking on her, she's got the medic alert, then really what we're talking here, I guess, is how you would handle things at the time of her passing?
Yes.
So does she have a will?
Yes, she does.
And when's the last time that will was looked at and or updated?
It's been probably 4 or 5 years. Virtually nothing has changed in her situation since then.
All right. And does she have her own home? Does she own that or rent that?
She owns her own home. She lives there by herself.
And is it titled for someone in the family to inherit, or?
Virtually all her assets are in a living trust.
Okay. Are you the sole benefit of that trust, or are there siblings? Or?
I will become a trustee upon her passing.
And then who will be the recipients of the benefit of that trust? Is it just you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be me.
All right. So as long as the documents have been properly drawn, accounts are properly titled, then you've done so much more than most people.
Yes.
And other than the sadness you'll have at the passing of your mom, you're ready.
Mm-hmm.
So do you know bank accounts, things like that, are they properly titled?
Yes.
All right. So if the house is properly titled, bank accounts are, any insurance?
She has a long-term policy that she's been paying into for some time.
But no life insurance or anything like that?
No.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to think of what other things I should be asking you, because it sounds like you've really done it. Sure.
The thing that I'm most concerned about is, you know, should I go over to her house and find her passed away? Who do I call?
In most jurisdictions, you'd call the police or the sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it would all start from there. Has she told you what she'd like to have happen at the time of her passing in terms of a funeral, burial, cremation, donation medical?
She has arrangements with a funeral home in another city that she used to live nearby.
Find those documents and find out what those call for and see if it's still what she wishes, if that was done any amount of time ago. And if she's open to conversation, if that is not an economical arrangement she's entered into, you might look at other things like looking at the website. You may have heard me talk about funerals.org. And I hope that your mom has many more years than her 88, but obviously she's had a good run as well. Best to you, and it's great for her that you're there to help take care of everything at the time she does pass away. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. Thanks so much for listening today. You know, there's a giant team behind bringing you everything we do at Team Clark. Our podcast and radio show are produced by Kim Drobes, Joel Larsgaard, Deborah Reese, and Jim Ayers. My TV producer is Leah Dunn. Clark.com is made possible thanks to Krista DiBiase, James DeGal, John Kress, Theo Timu, Michael Timmerman, Craig Johnson, Beth Marcinko, Clara Bassanetto, John Jones, and Grace Del Rio. ClarkDeals.com, where you can find the best deals from around the web, is produced by Karis Brown, Laura Sayers, Sarah Jordan, and Damon Marley. You can sign up for our newsletters at Clark.com thanks to Sally McDonald, and our social media gurus are Chelsea Glass and Nicole Carroll. Our off-air advice center is run by Lori Silverman, Sarah Mobley, and Sue Gatliff, and their team's available to serve you over 40 hours each week at 404-892-8227, and this is a free service of Team Clark. Thanks for listening. Till next time.